Well, we are back. Again, this is Stephen McCarthy coming to you from Minnesota, Minneapolis, Minnesota, and we are semi-live. And what I mean by semi-live is this is actually a taped interview with Sean Miska, a friend of mine, who has worked with athletes of all ages at his training facility down in Eden Prairie called Explosive Edge Athletics. And I have asked him to come on the show to talk about a not necessarily a training subject, but a training subject. And the idea is groupthink versus free will, Sean. And one of the things that we're starting to see at a very deep level in the world of athletics is so many people are being distracted by propaganda or what they read in the magazines or what they see on ESPN, you know, and what ends up happening is that there's a reality to life as a development of an athlete.
Absolutely.
Can you kind of speak generally to that subject kind of off the shoot just to get started? Because then I've got a whole bunch of particular questions to talk about further.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting topic to start off with, especially one that's probably misunderstood. So some of the things that I'm about to say are probably, A, just from my experience talking to athletes and usually having them in my office in a closed door type setting, sports psychology type setting, if you will, and hearing their thoughts on things. But also, you know, just kind of where I've come from as an athlete and the different types of athletes that I've been exposed to as well, both, you know, myself personally as a former high-level bodybuilder, and then now as a coach or as a trainer and a confidant in many cases of a lot of high-level athletes. And so I think it's a really interesting topic because we're often not allowed to really think with free will, if you will. That's kind of a mumbo-jumbo sentence there, statement. You can tell this one's definitely not scripted in any way, shape, or form. But, you know, I think too often we are forced to almost go in the one road. You know, if we have our Robert Frost moment where two roads are diverged in the woods, which one do we go down? We're typically led as a bunch of sheep being herded down the one road of trying to think as the group or trying to think the way the media is portraying us to think or looking at their portrayal of what we think is the truth but often is actually couldn't be further from the truth. So, you know, especially in our world of sports and how we think about things as trainers or coaches, you think about the propaganda that's put out there by some of the publications, whether they're the not-so-scientific publications like a Men's Fitness or a Muscle and Fitness or Men's Health, or even some of the organizational, scientific organizations that are putting things out that we should just all be led to believe certain things to be true where they give us certain practical applications or conclusive evidence without us trying to really, you know, dive into what it is that was being done in a research study or something of that nature. And it's kind of crazy to me to think of how many people just continue to go without their own free will thinking, and they go with the group because it's easy to agree with the group, right? If you just go with the group, there's nobody to challenge you. And the crazy thing for me is that typically those outliers, the people who go with their own free will, those people who stay true to themselves and really learn to think for themselves, are the people who end up either A, reaching their full potential in whatever avenue it might be, whether it's athletics or music or politics or whatever it might be, but it's also the people who really start to change the world and start to change that precedence to more of what the new norm should be of the group thinking process. So it's yeah, crazy that those are the people that would allow us to evolve humankind in any different one of those areas or avenues, but they're typically trying to be restricted, or we're trying to place restrictions on those people too often, more often than not.
Exactly.
So I don't know if that was a good start to where we want to go.
I'm so excited about this subject because it is such a, it seems so specific, but it really is a larger subject. I'm going to bring it down to two examples that I've seen within the last 2 weeks. And
okay,
so I'm going to throw them out to you, and then you give me your your general thoughts, you know, and you have the right to say no if you choose, you know. But
well, you know me, I never say no to anything that involves me talking about something. So
exactly.
I think we're okay with that.
Exactly. Now there's, and actually I'm going to give three examples, one on a scientific level, one in a football room or the realm, and then one in the new CrossFit world. And so let's start with the CrossFit world. Rich Fronning, you know, a great guy from what I've been told. I have a friend of mine that actually lives down the road from me. He says he's a fantastic, you know, individual, great guy, wouldn't tell you the wrong thing. But he is a contributor for Men's Fitness and Outside Magazine. And he was just featured on the cover of Men's Muscle and Fitness. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
On our website, we put two pictures, one of this guy that's 5'9", 200 pounds, we'll just say that's what they posted him as. In Outside Magazine, he is a square body type. Basically, shoulders and hips are the same distance, or as far as width are concerned. Then you go to the Muscle and Fitness magazine and the Men's Fitness, and they show him turned and then photoshopped, so he's got this hugest taper down to these really small hips. And so we're led to believe that this guy that's 5'9", 200 pounds is going to be looking like that. And I think, give us your thoughts related to, okay, they're trying to push us this direction towards this ideal body type when it isn't even reality.
Right. And, you know, that's the crazy thing, of course, as you know, or you may or may not know the detail of it, but me being a former national-level bodybuilder who used to get paid to a certain degree to eat, sleep, and train, and having been in a few of those types of magazines myself, I kind of know what the precedence that has been set in those pictures or with those photos is. First of all, we're talking about the best lighting with the best photographers and the best angles who know exactly how to portray people to look much, much different than if they were standing right there in front of me. You know, we're talking about that to begin with. That's already reality becomes skewed because of that. And that would be A. And then B, knowing how far they go in order to push a certain image onto us, whether it's male or female, whether it's someone's body type or the way that their body appears, the image of it, or whether it's, you know, a facial image and things like that. We know how many disorders and issues and things can come like that when people get the wrong idea in regards to the way somebody might always look. But, you know, I found this back in the day when I was bodybuilding, and I'd see fellow competitors, both male and female, out at the expos and such, and you see them, and you're like, wait a minute, you don't look anything like the person that I saw in the magazine. Like, you look more closely to real life than that superhero that I thought that you were. And then you start to realize, you know, kind of the dirty world that we live in, especially with the media portrayal of some of those images, some of those ideals, if you will, and you realize that those people aren't real to begin with. And yet the majority of people in our population are holding that as their standard. And it's kind of fascinating to me that we're misled, and it leads to dangerous behaviors on our own part in our population, and no one has any conscience about this. So not saying that Fronning has any impact or input on what types of pictures they show, because it's just the nature of the beast when you go into those magazines. I can't remember which ones you named that he was in, but all those magazines are essentially the same. They want to sell in sex sells, so to say. So does the best body image if it's a body magazine or a body appearance or physique sport type magazine. Those publications all going to be based on, you know, giving your ideal and then having something sold behind it, whether it's the information that's in the article that may or may not be exactly what that person does, or B, that's not going to lead to the result that that program or that product that's being sold is actually implying that it does. So that's where I start to have some sort of issue with it.
Zach, because I want you to stop right there, because I purposely said, okay, so we've established that the information is probably, let's just say, half-truths. You know what I mean?
Right.
Even those half-truths may not lead to the result that you're looking for, because they might be skewed in a way to make them more sexy. Okay, so let's leave that right there, because now we go to the next one. Just recently, there's a whole industry around omega-3 fatty acids and mm-hmm. taking them, and it promotes brain health and your body working at a higher level and yada, yada, yada. I'm not even going to take the time to go into that. But there came out a study from a cancer institute, a respected cancer institute, that basically said 70% of the people that take omega-3 fatty acids get prostate cancer. And you're like, okay. and I laughed at first when I read it. But then after a while, you start to see, like, Michael Savage comes out. He was an ex-PhD in some sort of nutrition, and he breaks it down. And then you see three or four other places break it down. And then you find out, when you get your hands in the study, that it's actually not considered high-level science. Well, what is their motivation? And you mentioned earlier that sometimes the scientific community even attempts to skew the information a certain way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a perfect case. I haven't seen the particular study that you're referring to.
Right.
But yet it happens, obviously I see it happening in the strength and conditioning community quite a bit, as well as other aspects of neurophysiology, neuromechanics, biomechanics, kinesiology, health promotion, and obviously this cancer study would fit under that health promotion side of things. But what we don't realize is that there's some ulterior motive in many of these cases, whether it's funding or whether it's advertisement or whatever it might be, certain people on the boards that are fitting in, and,
yes.
and they do just want to fit in for the nature of selling more information, whatever it might be, information, products, et cetera. What are the ulterior motives behind it is really what we have to ask ourselves. And we also have to remind ourselves as consumers, especially when we're looking at studies, is where did this information actually come from? Whom was the source? What is their experience? How credible is this information? And we also, then when we look at research, is we have to remember that correlation doesn't necessarily point out causation. So there's multiple layers of this issue. It's like an onion, if you will, and we just have to continue to unfold and unravel it.
See, now this, I'm going to give you another example because it totally makes sense to me now how we sometimes use studies to back up what we say so that we can look important. But when we realize the concept of the individual, it changes. So this is where the group versus the free. And I'm going to give you an example. I was reading in a paleo diet book by Lauren mm-hmm. Cordain, who is probably one of the most researched, I guess you would call him a nutritionist. I don't know what his actual PhD is in, if you will. But
okay.
He started the paleo diet, and I would actually believe a lot of the things he's talked about. He quotes in there a study from Ball State in the late 80s about how swimmers, after 21 days, start to show the effects of overtraining, which is in of itself, I agree. But then we talk about the individual, and we say the individual, of those 12 swimmers that they studied, only three of them actually started to show the wear and tear after 3 weeks. So therefore, you can then say, okay, 25% of them went into overtraining quickly.
Still going to be statistically significant at some point or at some level.
Exactly. But on the other hand, what about the three that it did take place and maybe their individual body makeup allows for them to take into account the training?
Mm-hmm.
So you could sit there and say,
and
well,
that's where we don't get to the bottom of it at. We never really get to the bottom of it. And I see this, not to totally cut you off, and you can put a stop to it or put a pause on me at any point, but I see this with professional athletes and any of the research or scientific studies that come out with them, is when we're talking about an athletic population, typically they're outliers in one way, shape, or form to begin with. So like you're alluding to, is those individuals may or may not be able to handle it. There's other contributing factors that are going into it, and it might not be exactly what it is that's being purported then in the information and the practical conclusions or the practical applications for us to use as practitioners. And that's obviously a main issue that I have. Obviously, I read an extensive amount of research, at least as it pertains to our field or my specific
yep.
field, and this is a major frustration for me, that if you just read the abstract and then you read the introduction and then you immediately skip forward or fast forward to the practical applications or the conclusive evidence without reading the methods and how the design of the study actually plays into it. And then you start to get your own hypothesis from it. You'll start to see that some of their own hypotheses were being proven in one way, shape, or form just based on the study itself. And that some other factors that were probably contributing and that were causes to the effect aren't really having any light shed on them.
But that doesn't – see, this is where I get to the inevitable discussion when you talk philosophy at this level, is that somewhere along the line you have to develop your own beliefs based on what you know, what you've researched.
Amen.
And then
yeah. –
yes, and then you start to look at – then you start to say – because one of the things that I've had challenges with is when you first start, you're so hungry for information that you just take it all in. You just keep taking, taking, mm-hmm. taking. What it leads you to is absolute confusion because it's like you know, because you're like, well, this guy over here just said that. Now you're just saying over here that that says that. Well, it's like, well, now I'm confused. Well, who do you believe? And I think
right.
that's the purpose sometimes is that, you know, it's almost like we're trying to research the tree from the leaves in, rather than starting at the stupid roots and working your way out, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me a long time to get to the realization that I said, no, I'm going to sit there and say, okay, this is my theory, you know, and this is why I see it's going the way I am, based on the individual, and then move it from there. Okay, so that's another discussion altogether of itself. We're going to leave that one. Now let's go to the last one, because I think this is the outworking of exactly what you're talking about. At this point, I'm going to move over to the Clay Matthews discussion.
Okay.
Because you, in one of your blogs, put together a fantastic piece, I thought, related to analyzing his game, if you will. I think that's probably the right mm-hmm. way to put it. And then talking about his strengths and his weaknesses, of which they generally lied in his hamstrings, okay? So I'll leave that for right there. And if you want to get the additional information, it's at Football Beyond the Stats with Sean Miska. The other part of the equation is then we go back to stack.com, and right on the front page it says Clay Matthews off-season workout, and it has him doing his buys and tries, you know, with the muscle shirt on and in the weight room. It's like, okay. This is exactly what we're talking. This is the outworking of what we're talking about, is that he is perpetuating the myth that that is how you become a pro athlete.
Right. And obviously you know where my soapbox would lie in
yes.
that, because we have to go much, much deeper than what we see structurally or
yes.
on the surface, because how many people, how many kids who are high school football players or collegiate football players, shit, how many NFL football players would look at him strike his – you know, celebration, his post-sack celebration, hit his front double bicep, and people are like, oh, crap, Clay Matthews could double as a bodybuilder, right?
Yeah.
And so then they look at what he's doing in training, and then they happen to stumble upon this article that you're referring to and think, oh, well, that's how he became an all-pro. Look at all the sweet biceps and tricep movements that he's doing. I should just do those until I'm blue in the face, and I'm going to move a whole heck of a lot like 52 does.
Yeah.
And of course, That fires me up because, A, no one has even really looked at how he moves, which what I brought, you know, I saw him one day in camp, and then I watched some film of, you know, because I've had some Packers here through the years, so I've been forced to watch some Clay Matthews film inadvertently. And, of course, he is one of the top performers in the National Football League to this day and right now in this day and age. But there are some energy leakage issues, and there are some movement and efficiency issues, and they have led themselves or they have shown themselves in the hamstrings primarily, where he's had an injury, you know, 4 out of the last 5 years to the same area. And maybe somebody should start looking at these things, because those are the things that are holding him back from being an even better player where it counts on the field, because those are the contributing factors to his movement and his performance on the field. But instead we're focusing in on what looks sweet with the biceps and the triceps and with his, you know, with his jersey hiked up underneath his shoulder pads. And so it's crazy that, you know, it's intuitively obvious to anyone who watches sport to know that those biceps and triceps probably shouldn't have that much impact on what's happening to his performance. But we look at the hot topic, and the hot topic that sells is how do we get those biceps and triceps that he's showing off in his post-celebration. in his post-sack celebration. You know, rather than how did he get to that position at the quarterback to either sack him or make that tackle or get that interception, and could he have actually done that better? And as I shed light on in my blog from a week or two ago when I visited camp, is that I believe that he does have some issues and some dysfunctions that need some taking care of, and that he could actually be better on the field where it counts, where he's paid to be better at, not being paid to be better in the suave head and shoulders commercial with his sweet, sexy, swaying hair. Like, I understand he gets paid for that, too, but not nearly as much as he gets paid to make plays on Sundays. And,
see,
and those are the things that I think we need to start to look at.
All right, now listen to this, because we've already it's always amazing to me how short time is when we get going. But just if you could, in 2-3 minutes here to close down this segment, summarize what we've just talked about and what you can do. First of all, it's always just two aspects. First of all, as a trainer, we're going to give you 6 minutes, all right? And 2-3 minutes on what you can do as a trainer to start your development of understanding the roots that go to this trunk, that go to the leaves, so to speak. And then as an athlete, how to do that same thing.
Well, you know, I'll try to do it one up and accumulate that together, but knowing me, it probably won't happen. So even though I'm motivated to do that, we'll see how it ends up coming out. But I'll try to bridge them together as much as I can, because I believe that at the core of all of this and this topic and this issue, and of course it's purely philosophical, so there is probably no right or wrong answer here, because it really depends on who the person is as an individual. You know, becoming a leader in either one of those fields or being who it is that we were set out to be, we have to try to find it within ourselves, what our own thoughts are. And knowing and understanding where those are coming from, knowing that we're all complex beings, that everything originates at our brain and how we process information, what we're led to believe is dependent on maybe some of our withstanding beliefs that we already have, our long withstanding beliefs that we already have. Knowing that you should probably be, if you want to reach the highest amount of success in either one of those fields, whether it's as a trainer or a coach, or it is completely on the opposite end as an athlete, learning to A, question everything, even the thoughts that you already hold, understanding where they come from, those are things that are all very, very important philosophically, at least for me, to know that if I'm going to advance myself and I'm going to throw information out at an athlete or a fellow coach and try to purport something as being real or more true than the information that we already hold, I have to understand where it's coming from in my mind and how much legitimacy and validity it has to it. And so I'm questioning everything that I do. You've been to my office before, and you probably have seen there's literally, I'm not exaggerating when I say there's 100 post-it notes on my desk, and they all have questions on them. Some of these questions, people will look at them and say, well, this is a question that's based on your own theory that you told me. And that's 100% true, because I want to be able to prove my own theories right, and therefore I have questions about them that still stand. Am I right about this, or is it just the default answer that I've gone to because some other person told me it at one point, and it sounded sexy, and it sounded cute, and it sounded like I could give it out to another person?
Yes.
And so I want to be able to have the answer, if you will, and the answer according to Sean Mishka and his thoughts. And I believe we all owe it to ourselves to have those answers that we truly 100% believe in, because, you know, we have to, that's what really A, is being a leader is all about, and B, it all starts with being authentic to yourself and what it is that you believe in. Because if we don't believe in something, then we don't believe in anything. So, and that means we're also going to fall for anything, if that makes sense. So,
100%, because it still comes back to the same. It's funny, you go through this whole long 20-minute conversation, and you come back down, and you have to come to the realization, how are you going to think? Are you going to think with the group, or are you going to think on your own? And if you choose to think on your own, you realize that you're setting yourself up against the group, and that if you don't have the, the kahunas to stand up and say, you're going to go this way because it's right, and everybody else telling you wrong, then you deserve the results It's funny because I challenge everybody to read, and I'm going to talk with Sean after this because we do have to get going, but go to Football Beyond the Stats and with Sean Mishka and read his analysis of Clay Matthews. Go to my site, look at Rich Fronning, and then go to stack.com, go to these sites and look at it. There is no way that these two thoughts are coherent. You can't look at that and say, in reality, if I do those things, what's going to happen? You know what's going to happen. You can't, just because it's, oh, he's the world champion, he's an all-pro, and do it anyways. So, John, thank you, as always.
My pleasure, my friend.
Yes, Explosive Edge Athletics is the name of Sean's company. I highly recommend athletes, if you have the opportunity, to stop in and see him down in Eden Prairie, Minnesota. And thank you, Sean, for coming on the show.
It's my pleasure. Anytime, my friend.